You're listening to the Nightlife Podcast with Indira Naidu.
I want to share with you an extraordinary story of physical and mental determination. Would you swim the English Channel? No, not for quids. It's one of those tests, though, that for some people is on their bucket list. And surprisingly, more people have reached the summit of Mount Everest than have completed the 33-kilometre open water swim from England to France. Now, Sydney local Ross Youngman is one of those who wanted to tick the I swam the English Channel box. And indeed, he swam it 10 years ago. And yesterday, he just did it again, becoming, at the age of 60 years, one of the oldest swimmers to complete the feat. Ross's epic swim also raised lots and lots of money for a good cause, which will go, and most of this money will go to the Australian Indigenous Education Foundation. Ross Youngman is joining me now. Welcome to Nightlife, Ross.
Thanks, Indira. How are you?
I am well, but how are you is the question. How are you feeling? Like, are you completely sore all over?
It's been a bit day-to-day for the last 2 days because I finished yesterday here. I was in bed at 4 a.m. And so very sore when I woke up yesterday. Headache. Quite knocked around. But today, I sort of feel a lot better. I've been able to actually move around a bit.
Yes. So where are you
now? I'm in Dover now.
Oh, you're in Dover. Okay. So tell us, 33 kilometres in the dark, cold North Sea. How long did it take you, Ross?
Well, it took me 14 hours and 56 minutes. So that was a long day at the office.
Yeah. And that's a pretty good time. How does that compare to the one you did 10 years ago when you swam it?
Well, the one I did 10 years ago was actually in the three-person relay. So it's, I've got to tell you, that's like night and day. It's not really comparable. So I swam last time, four one-hour legs. This time I just did basically 15 hours straight out. So
yeah,
last time in the relay with three people, we did 11 hours. But you can almost, you can go pretty fast for each hour. So relays and solo swims,
are
just different.
Different
animals.
And tell us, so it's summer over there. What were the water conditions like for you?
Well, they've had that heat wave here. So that creates, the convection current. So it's been quite blowy here. So you get these windows. So all these old fishermen sort of wait to pilot you across. And they've got all these bookings I've had for like 3 years waiting, and then you get here and they'll ring you and say, well, you can't swim for 4 days, too windy. Because if you're swimming into 15 knot winds and the waves are a meter, after a while it's like punching a brick wall. So you have to wait for a day where you think you can get across. And so they look for windows of about 12 to 15 hours where the water's sort of a bit calmer, and often that happens at night. So, you're always going to have some element of a night swim in your crossing.
And what are the hazards then of doing this swim? Because I remember you mentioning that, not only are the tides a killer, but there can be jellyfish. I mean, what were the problems that you came across?
My biggest thing is you can't swim 15 hours without feeding. So I need to feed, and a lot of they're all liquid feeds. So I rotate through like Milo and water, flat ginger beer. I'll have Staminade and a gel. I'll have, warm chicken soup, basically put through the grinder. And then I'll have another sports drink. So a lot of that's got sort of sugary energy base. And to be honest, it doesn't sit well on my old stomach. So I find I have a lot of trouble keeping all the nutrition down. And it's just like a car. If you don't have fuel in the tank, the car doesn't go. So especially on a 15-hour swim. So that's a big issue for me. Jellyfish are a problem. I only encountered one yesterday. So that sort of grazed my arm and, you know, stung me, but that was the only one. But my biggest issue was on the French side. The tide had swung me right down towards Normandy, and I needed to get back to this cape that juts out. And suddenly I did a big U-turn with the tides, and I had to get across to make that tip of that cape. If I'd missed that, I would have been out there for another 3 hours trying to make sure.
Gosh.
So that was the biggest thing for me. Right at the end of the swim, I was being asked to sprint and try and get in, and I ended up on barnacled rocks. You have to clear the water. That's the rules of the Channel Swimming Federation. You have to clear the water. So if you land on a nice beach, that's great. But if you land on a rocky outcrop, not so good. So I was trying to clear these barnacled rocks and getting lacerated as I was trying to finish the swim, you know.
Oh, how horrific. What a terrible way to finish something so grueling.
Yeah.
I'm speaking to Ross Youngman, a Sydney local who has just swam the English Channel for the second time. But this one, pretty grueling because he was doing it just solo, just him, not in any relay as he did the first time around. And he did it in a pretty good time. Ross, I'm surprised at just how strong your voice is sounding after that sort of swim.
I've got to say, I've loaded up on the Strepsils to try and make sure I can get through this without coughing or spluttering.
Yeah.
But, it's coming good. It wasn't very good. I wouldn't want to do this yesterday, let's just say.
Yeah. So you're not, you weren't alone when you were doing this. You had logistic support, a support crew. What sort of port do you need to be able to do this sort of swim?
This sort of swim, you need a boat to escort you. You swim beside the boat. The boat skipper's in charge of everything. He can pull you out of the water if he thinks you're hypothermic or you're not functioning correctly. They count your strokes to see whether they are declining or whether any signs of cognitive decline. So that's the skipper's role, run the boat and be in charge of everything. The skipper's word is final, and then he would have two crew, and then I'd have to bring generally two people to support me, minimum of two people to support me on the boat, who basically, in my case, you know, really manage my feeds and manage my timings and give me encouragement as I'm going along and tell me where I'm at, you know, how I'm going, and try and help me maintain my psyche, when all sorts of demons are going through your head.
Yeah. I mean, people don't really know that, do they? That it's the what's going on in your head. You're actually really swimming against yourself when you take on these sort of epic endurance efforts.
Absolutely.
When was it the worst part for you in this swim, Ross?
Look, I think I always find it's a funny thing, but I find the first half is difficult because mentally, I try and get through the first half. First 7 hours, you've got to get through that to get to the second, let's call it 7 or 8 hours. So I try and get through the first 7 hours, which is a grind. And then it's really for me, I recalibrate. And now the event's starting or the swim's starting. I'm halfway. That's gone. And I've got to swim another 7 or 8 hours, which is in my mind, I've just done that. I can do that again. I'm going to now set off to do that again. So, and then I work to 7 hours, then I get to 10, because in my mind, 10 is sort of a good swim that if you said, look, I pulled out at 10, people go, oh, he swam for 10 hours, you know? So you've got all these little things that are going on. And then on the other side, you know, I'm raising money and I've put myself right out there on this Australian Indigenous Education Foundation. And, you know, there's a lot of people monitoring it and you feel this absolute obligation to finish. So I was going through all that, but I kept on looking at the boat and thinking, gosh, it'd be nice just to be sitting up there in warm clothes and out of this water.
Yeah. So I've seen images of you covered in a white substance. What was that?
Oh, look, it's a heavy lanolin generally. We call it channel grease, but it's generally a mixture of zinc and lanolin. It's there to, I think, part of it's what protects the sun. Another part of it is psychologically to, you know, help protect your back from the cold if it's cold. So that's what we do. But I would say for me, yes, the other day it was 18 degrees. Now that sounds cold, I know, but I've sort of trained to do this at 16. And so when I got in at 18, that was like balmy for me. And I thought the water temperature is not going to be a factor here on this swim, which is great. Tick that off, take that off the concern list, and off you go.
You spoke about training, Ross. Of course, training must have been such a big part of preparing you mentally and physically for this event. What did you need to do?
Look, because of COVID.
No, what sort of training?
I've been doing this
What sort of preparation did
training?
You do? Yeah, training.
Yeah. But originally it was going to be 1 year of training and go into the channel, but that was 3 years ago. Because of COVID, I had to do 3 years of training. Training basically, because I couldn't get to England. So training consists of four sessions in the pool at 6 o'clock every morning for 1.5 hours, swimming 4.5 to 5 Ks in a squad. And then on Saturday, I go and do what you pick from the menu, if you like, and it's either something minimum 3 hour swim up to 8 hours on Saturday. And then you sort of rinse and repeat. And then as events come up, we do things like I've done, you know, Rottnest swims as part of the build up for this. And there's a big swim in Hobart, the Derwent River, which I've done. And then in Sydney, there's Palm Beach to Shelley Beach, which I also did along this journey. But the journey was stretched, you know, so it's been hard because I've had to be at this high level of fitness and training for 3 years. You know, last year I was almost able to get out of the country and do it, but then, you know, there was a shutdown, lockdown, couldn't get out. That's been what I've been doing for, you know, my wife's had enough. I have to dial it down now and spend a bit more time on the home front.
Well, you did this for a really fabulous reason, to raise money for Indigenous literature. Tell me why that became an area of interest for you.
Look, I went to I remember my father when I was 7 and my brother was about 9, and he came out to the garden and he said, listen, boys, I'm going to send you to this school unless you win scholarships to that school. And if you win scholarships, I'll send you to the school that I went to, but I can't afford to send you to that school, which was Launceston Grammar School. So we were going to the local high school, which would have been fine, but, you know, I wanted to go to the school my father went to. And so that was what ended up happening. We got to that school, Launceston Grammar, through scholarships. So I think sometimes people need a leg up. Indigenous children, to me, haven't been represented across the full spectrum of Australian education, either for reasons of location, money, understanding of the system, or bias. So, you know, all kids in Australia should have representation across the spectrum. And if they don't have the money or understanding to do that, someone should step in to help. And that's what the Australian Indigenous Education Foundation does. It helps Indigenous kids get some of the best schools in Australia where they're not represented. And it's done that with 1,000 Indigenous kids to date. So that's, you know, I've been a huge beneficiary of education. You know, to me, education is key to having a broad range of opportunities in life. And it's also key for all kids to have a cultural understanding of each other. And if groups in education are not represented, basically that's not going to work.
Yeah. Well said, Ross. How much money do you think you've raised?
Well, at the moment, I've raised $140,000.
Extraordinary.
The target's $200,000, so I've put a stretch target out there. So if anyone would like to help, they can go to my website, Ross English Channel, and it's just very simple, Ross English Channel, and it's all there.
A number of listeners are loving hearing your story, hearing your passion, focus, and want to know what you do for a day job.
Oh, look, I'm CEO of an asset management company in Sydney with about 65 people. So I have a full-time job, serious job, if you like, and we manage money for some of the big super funds and individuals around Australia and internationally. So that's the day job. And then swimming is the sort of – swimming was always the passion, the relaxation, you know, if you like, the stress release for me. You know, my father used to take me to the Launceston Aquatic Centre on Saturday and Sunday, and my other sister and brother, and that's where we used to hang. And he's 89. He still swims now. He walks up to the pool, swims, and he introduced us to that. And it's just been, you know, a gift for me of, in a way, of managing the different stresses and, you know, keeping fit and doing a range of different things wrapped into one sport. So that's been great. But, you know, a few years ago when the kids had left school, I thought I'm going to go back to the marathon swimming squad, which I really like the vibe, and I'm going to give this another crack.
Mm. What does it do for you? Because I know I was a competitive swimmer when I was young, and I found it actually killed off my joy of swimming for quite a long while, and I couldn't get back into it because jumping into a pool just reminded me of the starter gun and the competition and the finish line and my times. Do you think that this experience of swimming the channel will change the way you look at swimming?
Look, I think I was lucky because, you know, I don't know your situation at all, but, and I'm not making any assumptions, but my parents were, you know, my father loved us being competitive swimmers, but I, you know, it was Launceston, it was an open-end pool, it was cold, and I was 10, and at about 11, I think I said to my father, I'm not enjoying this. I'd had a little bit of success in competitive swimming. I'm not enjoying this. I don't want to go into that squad anymore. And he said, look, if you just promise me you'll swim for the school and do that and dial it up occasionally around the school sports. And I said, sure. And that's sort of, we did that. And I think that meant that I didn't get the burnout that a lot of kids do that are really pushed hard, you know, into their late teens. Mm. So I got the exposure. I got a little bit of success, which I, you know, I liked and helped me with confidence. But I wasn't, you know, I got out of the really competitive swimming earlier and was able then to embrace swimming for what it can be, which is great exercise and, you know, all the things I talked about, like stress relief and stretching and, you know, yoga almost, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it is beautiful. I mean, I love it now. That moment when you finally got to the rocks and were able to climb, sadly, over those to actually finish your swim, mm. What was going through your head, Ross, when you knew, I've done it, I finished?
Look, to be honest, I stood up on the rocks and put my hands in the air, and the skipper was, you know, was a bit grumpy, to be honest, was in a Zodiac shouting at me to get back in the water and then made me swim back to the boat, which I thought was a little bit, he could have towed me at that point. Look, I wasn't in great shape, to be honest. I sort of had the knowledge that I'd done it, but I'd definitely gone to the edge, you know.
Yeah. You said your wife has probably reached her sort of bit fed up with all of it because it went on for so many years during COVID. What's going to happen now? I mean, you sound like the sort of person that's constantly setting goals for yourself.
Well, I just recalibrate, I think, a little bit, take the swimming down and take a break, and we'll do, you know, more family stuff and then, you know, never say never, but do some of the more enjoyable shorter swims that, you know, you can do around Australia. 10Ks, those are my shorter swims.
Yeah.
And you know, as against the 33K ones. So, you know, that's what I'm thinking. And, you know, we'll probably do, you know, try and just do a little bit more traveling and things together. So, yes, it was supposed to be a one-year project. So I can understand why it got a bit tedious for people around me when it took 3 years to get here and do this.
We mentioned, Ross, that you're now one of the older people that have completed the English Channel swim, being 60 years old. Which is an extraordinary achievement. What did you learn about yourself through this whole process?
Look, you know, one of the other things I've been doing is studying psychology, you know, at Sydney Uni on part-time. And, you know, it's really interesting to look at that side of things and compare it to what we do in life, the, you know, matching what we do in life to the, if you like, the academic research. And if you go into, if you're 60 or 65, I'm 61 now. So if you go into a swimming group that basically starts at 25 and goes up to my age, you get treated like just one of the guys. You're hanging with young people, younger people, you know, right through the spectrum from the 20s up to the 60s. And mentally, that makes you feel young. You know, you feel like you're young, and it has a very positive effect on your well-being as a human being. So that's what I would say to people. If you can, you know, the body doesn't decline until, you know, they say into your 70s, you start to have some muscle atrophy, etc. It gets a bit harder, but certainly, and I'm not saying you, if you're in your 70s or 80s, you shouldn't be exercising, but it does. But at 60, what I'm know and what I'm showing is that you can be as competitive as a 25-year-old in terms of swimming. I'm not a great swimmer. You know, I just do the work that everyone else does, whether they're 25, 40, or 55, and then I go out there and prepare and do my swims. And that's what I've learned from this, is that I can do that, and that, you know, you get respect from everyone for just being one of the gang.
Mm. Marion in Leichhardt is saying, what an inspirational conversation. Thank you. She said she was feeling sorry for herself with a cold, but now that's all sorted, listening to you, Ross.
That's great.
It's extraordinary. I mean, that you can have this sort of energy after what you've just expended over the last couple of days and, of course, over the last couple of months and years. So congratulations. I'm very proud to know you. We're alumni of the same school in Launceston, so it's I'm very proud of you too. What an achievement, and congratulations over all the money you've raised and all those wonderful children that are going to be helped and supported by it.
Thanks, Indira, for having me on the show. Yeah. Really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Ross. Rest.
Thank you.
Ross Youngman, who is a Sydneysider who has just completed the English Channel swim for the second time, this time, though, as a solo swimmer. And he did it all to test himself, of course, but to raise money for Australian Indigenous Education Foundation. And if you would like to add to the money that he's already raised, he's aiming for $200,000. And I think he said he had $140,000 or something already. Just go to Ross Youngman English Channel to their website.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.